All right, here we go on a Monday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll get to Friday night's festivities out at Hollywood Casino. A lot of you that made it out there had a great time. We sure did. It was good to see you guys. It was good to hang out with you a little bit and also hear from Michael Massey and Kyle Isbell. So we'll get to that maybe during this hour. Also, a reminder, Royals have a day game today in Milwaukee to try to get their second win of the season. That will take place a little after 1 o'clock. It means Vern's On Deck show is at noon today. So we're on for 2 hours, and we hope you guys, of course, will stick with us during the show. And of course, during Vern's pregame on the Odyssey app as well. Make sure you check it out. I'm in the video stream running right now, Facebook, Twitch, YouTube. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. So let's get started a little differently today. We're going to get to the Royals, I promise, here in about 10 minutes or so.
And glad to see India's in the lineup. That's good news.
That news did just come out, the lineup, literally 2 seconds ago. The lineup was out. India's in it. So means the scary, scary 99-mile-per-hour fastball that hit his helmet obviously was not damaging to his playing time or anything like that. So that was awesome to see. But I do want to start with news in soccer. Sporting Kansas City made a move that I think a lot of fans thought should have happened a year ago, maybe even further than that, if you look back, and that is that Peter Vermes has been let go. They mutually parted ways, how they're phrasing it, with Sporting Kansas City. A couple things with this right out of the gate. Number one, they hadn't won in 195 days. Okay, that's not going to...
When you said that number this morning, I was like, that's how long it's been since they won a match?
They had a draw this year, 0-5-1 in MLS play, but they had not won in 195 days. You just, like, if you want the most simplified way to explain what happened,
no one can keep their job under those conditions. Yes,
that's as simply put, not acceptable, right? For any professional franchise, the decision also probably was pressured even more when you see the Cauldron put out a strong statement over the weekend after their latest loss. I'm not saying that's why he got fired, but when you have a fan base and your most diehard supporters asking for the firing of your manager. And then on the other hand, you look back and where Kansas City is at with soccer, and the fact that the World Cup is coming here next summer, that doesn't happen without Peter Vermes. So there's the balance of like recognizing it's time. Like it was time to move in a different direction, but also he should be someone that's remembered fondly in Kansas City soccer history forever, both as a player and, of course, as a manager, brought an MLS Cup here in 2013. But they just have not had anywhere near the success that they had going back to the first, what would that have been, 7 years or so of his tenure. I believe he was brought in 2009.
Yeah. If the way I view it, you should remember fondly the time he had in Kansas City, right? Like for all the reasons. They won 3 Open Cups. They won an MLS Cup. They made Kansas City part of like the whole soccer capital of America stuff came from the fact that Sporting Kansas City was really popular and well-liked and people supported them well. I would say that that's what made it easier for teams like the KC Current to come back and do all these things. Like all of that was ground setting for Kansas City to become a city that supported soccer. This firing is 4 years overdue, at least minimum 2. When they extended his contract a couple of years ago, when the writing was already on the wall that things were going poorly. This decision is way late. I mean, they're way late in the game. I don't want to take away from what he brought to the city or the things that outside of this, but if we're sitting here this morning being like, should they have fired Peter Vermes? Is there a soul left on the planet who thinks that? I compared it, and I still think it's accurate. It's the way Dayton Moore went down. Dayton Moore, hero in the city, turned around a franchise, won a championship, but the last few years were so bad, we can't even let you keep your job, let alone think things are turning around. If they're going to go that poorly, at some point you're out. And that's the way it happened with Vermes.
You can only be loyal for so long. And to what you just said, though, were they ever loyal, because it probably should have been done at least a year or so earlier. And so you sit here today and after the result on Saturday, although I think it was Sam McDowell from the Star, some of his reporting suggesting that this has been in the works for weeks, that perhaps ownership was at some practices more often than they normally were recently, observing, making kind of preparation to make a decision like this. But I know, like, you know, some friends of yours as well, I'm sure, like, that are diehard soccer fans, have had season tickets for Sporting KC, and like a lot of people are saying, just finally, Finally, that was a few of the texts I got today. A lot of people finally, you never want to stomp on somebody's grave, right? That just lost their job, but everybody's relieved almost among fan base. It sounds like that this is finally a move that Sporting KC decided to make despite everything that they were able to accomplish. But this is the direction that you have to go when you haven't won in 195 days.
I will say this, the frustration, I would think, if you're a Sporting Kansas City fan, and I certainly would have if, you know, like you're looking at where this team is for the same reason for the NFL comp we've made before. Choosing to let Eberflus screw it all up and then firing in the middle of the year and then resetting is pushing back the reset by a full calendar year. If it was going to be an 0-5-1 start and you were going to walk on Peter Vermes anyway, you should have made this decision last winter. You should have made this decision when the season was over. You should have fired him in the offseason, burned it all to the ground, and rebuilt yourself out of the ashes. And instead, you let yourself get into a season that already feels lost, the team already feels lost, and you let him get his fingerprints all over a team that's going nowhere. And now you got to wait like a whole year to kind of like reset. Interim coaches and all this other stuff. You could have had somebody else's plan starting, and instead you got to ride out now a full MLS season in order to do it. Back to like the because again, I don't think that this is like
and Sporting, by the way,
news.
Saturday they play at Children's Mercy Park, I believe, against St. Louis, and their fans are going to potentially take over Children's Mercy Park. So that was another, this at least, you know, you want to talk about fans. Now that the coach that they did not, manager they did not want being part of the organization anymore is gone, hopefully it almost brings some renewed even support behind the franchise heading into even a game like that. I'm just talking from a rival thing. We all know for many years with the Royals how nobody loves seeing St. Louis fans come over and pack Kauffman Stadium.
Yeah, it sucked.
Doesn't matter what sport you're talking about. You don't want to see that happen, and that's what you're in danger of seeing happen again on Saturday.
I mean, you were getting ready to just lose the entire fan base. And I don't think that the cauldron were the straw that broke the back on this thing. I think the whole haven't won in 195 days thing might have had something to do with it.
Well, yeah, because a couple years ago, weren't they? Was it a year or two ago? They were holding signs saying to fire him. So this is not the first time that they were asking for this decision.
But those are the fans you can't lose. You know, like in the end, those are the ones you can't lose. Look, from the times that I've covered Sporting, and I've covered them probably 15, 20 times over the years, very easy to get along with, very open, honest with the media. I like those things about it. But I mean, again, it was a wash. I do really genuinely appreciate, though, how he helped grow soccer in this city. Like, I'll love, like, forever, like, you'll be able to look back and be like, wow, what a contribution he made to the entire city and parts of the growth of the city as a result of that. World Cup games will be played in Kansas City a year from now. And part of what he started back then is a reason, not the only reason.
No, but without the success of Sporting Kansas City with him in charge, the World Cup is probably not here in 2026,
agreed,
next year. And I mean, go back to the Wizards day when they were playing at the time T-Bones Park or whatever it was called. You know, it's the Monarchs now, but you know what I'm saying? They were playing there before as they transitioned to Sporting to Children's Mercy Park at the time, Livestrong Park, when it first opened up. Yeah, I know. When it first opened up. But that
like
was
milk.
The thing. Drew may not know the background on that one, but yeah. That was him, right? Like, that was where it all began, and they won a title long before the Royals won their World Series in 15, before the obvious dynasty run the Chiefs are on. Sporting was the first local to win in a very, very long time and bring a championship to the city. So, you respect to Peter Vermes for what he brought to the city and for soccer in this town. But yeah, it was obviously time to move on, and Sporting Kansas City finally made that decision this morning, sending out a press release. And I believe tomorrow there'll be a press conference to talk about steps moving forward for that organization.
Yeah, from the A-League family.
I believe that is right as well. All right, let's get to some Royals baseball. As we said, day game today right here on 96.5 The Fan. They're in Milwaukee, first road trip, short one, by the way, of the season. They're right back in town this weekend at Kauffman Stadium. The good news, let's start with that, as you alluded to right at the top, Jonathan India is in the lineup despite getting hit in the head. Really, really scary scene for a moment there. Emmanuel Clase, 99-mile-per-hour fastball. So the fact that he's already in the lineup that quickly is honestly, I actually was surprised, which is a great thing. But you know, you're wondering if you're gonna sit out a day or if there was any lingering effects. Clearly not the case, as India will be leading off today for the Kansas City Royals. Overall, what did you guys make of the opening weekend? 913-586-7965. Because they go 1-2. You never want that. It's a tough division rival.
Yeah, team preferred
that, 2-1.
Sure.
That is, you know, a team that has won this division and overall has had your number over the last 5-7+ years. I thought from a starting pitching end, I want to start right there, because from a starting pitching end, you did not get the sharpest of outings from Reagans or from Lugo, but both of them did gut it out enough, as veterans will, to get you. You know, they weren't out after 3 or 4 innings. You know, they were able to gut through and get you 5 innings or so. Maybe not the case yesterday, right? It all kind of fell apart. One of those clunkers of a game where you just had nothing going. But I thought, while you need your starters to be sharper, it's the first outing, I'm not worried about Reagans or Lugo, but they still found a way to at least give you some length, some innings. And then, of course, from an offensive perspective, the questions that we had all offseason showed up in the first series of the year. And that was your batters 5-9, 10 for 56 with 11 strikeouts in the series.
For a team that struck out like the eighth least in the opening weekend in Major League Baseball, yeah, that's not ideal. You would have preferred something a little bit different than that to go with the start of the season. But so the starting pitching was probably the bigger concern, in the sense that, kind of a rocky weekend, but also the most sustainable thing, right? So you're like, well, yeah, the starting pitching didn't go all that great, but history tells me it'll go a lot better here moving forward, so I'm probably fine. 5-9, that was a problem all last year. 162 games. The idea that they're just going to get no production out of there again is concerning. Renfro had a bad weekend. MJ had a bad weekend. You're like, oh, come on, let's not do this again. And it's early, and I'm not like here to panic or anything after 3 games. But of all the things that probably stood out, that's probably at the top of the list because of the issues that they had with it for a huge chunk of last season. And look, Bobby got off to a slightly slower start. Oh no. I would say Vinny got off to a really good start, which is encouraging. And I think that make you feel a little bit better. The top of the order still feels like it'll probably work. India, by the way, looks like a professional on-base guy. You were talking about, like, professional on-base guy, man. Every at-bat feels like it takes 10 years. He walks. He hits singles. He just gets on base. I kind of love that. From an
sure.
opening
the 0-for-5 opening day, we knew it was an outlier. And then the very next day, his first at-bat is a single. It comes with a couple hits. And yeah, you feel like you do know every single time out what you're going to get. There's a reason why he was tops in the majors in walks. He gets on base. That was the one thing at opening day that I don't, you know, there's 3 or 4 things we listed off on Friday's show of like, hey, you can be concerned about the outfield. You can be concerned about this or that. Don't be worried about Bobby Wood Jr. Don't be worried about Jonathan India. You know, you want to be worried about Renfro and Melendez and the 5-9, more than fair. And if you're still worried about the bullpen, like, more than fair. But there's a few guys where they're going to have to struggle a lot longer for me to be concerned about it. I think it's interesting. We've already seen it play out twice now in the first 3 games, and it's very evident. We talked about during spring, and that is, like, Jonathan India has played left field twice. He came in and he started at third on opening day. Then he moved to left field when they brought in Michael Garcia, who played third. Then in the lineup on Saturday, India was playing left field. Michael was playing third base. And Michael had a nice series.
He did.
Against the Guardians. The lineup is
that
out.
Homer was an absolute
missile. Yes, she's got out quick. Now you have it in front of you. I know India's in the lineup. Is he playing third or left field? My point being is, there, if he's not playing third to start, or even if he is, it feels like now he's going to play left field at some point almost every game, I feel like, at this point. Or
is it third today?
But will he end up playing left field at some point today? My guess is yes.
Eventually, defensively, they probably make that shift and kind of go that way. But yeah, I would say, like, I think the one thing that I had probably undervalued in what they're going to do is, and J.J. Piccolo actually told us this on opening day, and it wasn't something I had thought about very much, but they are going to pinch run, they are, like, every day, the 26-man roster, they're going to use all damn 26 of them down to the last couple of dudes, and that's where, like, India's ability to play left or Massey's ability to occasionally play third or left, they're just going to, like, move people around depending on where they stick them, where they move them, and everything's going to kind of get shuffled because they are going to want to maybe pull MJ Melendez to pinch hit for him, or Renfro depending on the splits, or Canna depending on the splits. Because the other day, They took Salvi from behind the dish, put him at first, got Fermin in the game at catcher. That was in the come from behind game, I think, on Saturday. So
And then the lineup yesterday to start had Salvi at first.
Yeah. So like they're just constantly kind of circling around these things. I know we're only three games into the season, so we don't want to make any definitive opinions stand now, except for one. I'd like to make one definitive opinion stand now. Screw that Kyle Manzardo guy. I had never heard of him before. Thursday, and that screw that guy. And is he just going to be a huge pain in the ass for the rest of time? I hate that every division team always has one guy that you're like, this guy looks like he should be selling me a used car in 2006. He's just hitting all weekend. Is it because they don't have a scouting report on him, or is Kyle Manzardo just going to be like an absolute force or something? Trust me, you had not heard of him before Thursday, right?
No, that was my point.
He's
on Friday.
A rookie or
that
whatever.
He played last year, but this was his first opening day. On Friday, when Bink was filled in, that was my whole thing. People were critical of Q walking Carlos Santana to get to Manzardo, and Manzardo had a great opening day. And my whole thing was, look, I understand he was hot that day, but in game one of 162, I still will go with the matchup-based decision, which is what Q went. It backfired. Yeah. And give the kid credit. You know, and that was my thing. I said, how many of you even knew who Manzardo was? This was on Friday's show. And no reason you should have. So he just had a great weekend. You know, it is what it is. But with Q, in terms of managerial decisions, we should know this by now. We saw it last year and even in his first year as a manager.
Going with the numbers.
They're
going to
go with numbers. And most of the time, I actually think it will pay off. There are going to be times, though, where someone bucks the trend or bucks the numbers, right? It's not 100% foolproof thing. And that's what happened against Manzardo a couple times, specifically on Thursday. But if you're upset with the matchup-based decisions, then like I'm part of it, you haven't been paying attention to how they're going to manage games and handle strategy in games. That's what they did last year, and they won 86 games. You know what I mean? Like, so that's just who they are as an organization now and who he is as a manager. They're going to go 90% of the time with the matchups. I'm not saying later on in the year or in the playoffs that you shouldn't have a mix of feel also with it more. But in game one, when you really have nothing to base off of other than the numbers from the prior year in history, yeah, I'm fine with going pure matchup-based decision-making this early on in the year. Later on in the season, yeah, it can differ a little bit.
Text line saying, hey, don't pitch to the guy who's hot and confident. It's one game.
Hot and confident. He had three at-bats in game one of 162. You cannot be hot.
He was hot after three at-bats?
Nobody can be hot in game one. Sorry.
I don't even think anybody can be hot. Maybe week one if you're like hitting it like Aaron Judge. Maybe, okay? I'll listen to an argument on that end in those specific circumstances, but certainly not game one for a guy who hit 235 last year in his 53 games.
And they obviously like him. He's a young talent. They probably feel great about him in Cleveland. It's just that, you know, if he keeps hitting like this and they meet again, and they'll meet earlier than this, but it's July. Okay, yes.
Yeah, don't let him murder you.
Have a different feel. But in the first three games of the 2025 season, yeah, I think they're going to go with what the numbers are telling him. I'm fine with that.
In fairness, this is pretty much what he was in the minors. I mean, he was pretty much like a 370 on base guy with real power. He had 37 home runs between two seasons and 177 games in AAA. So, like, that's how it is. By the end of the weekend, I'm like, I don't want to see your face
anymore. I think you're jealous
you're
jealous he can grow the stash. You can't. I think that's what it is. He can grow the stash, man.
I can grow a stash that looked as
like
good
that,
as
you think?
The one on his baseball reference page, I could. You think I could grow like a terrible looking stash?
No, it's not a great looking one. No, no.
I could grow
not.
A stash that looked as good
can
as Kyle
you?
Manzardo's.
We've tried, I think, on the show.
I could absolutely
could
grow a stash as good. Look how terrible that stash looks like. It looks like it belongs on a different part of his body. It's not even full. You want me to grow a stash that looks that terrible? That's the level of mustache I could grow. Not better than that. I didn't say it could be better than Kyle Manzardo's, but I could certainly grow. I could grow one that at least looked that good.
Now you were out on Friday. Bink filled in. You were playing Dance Dad. Is that what it was?
Yeah. So obviously my kids, Ruby, my older one, dances. And so like this was an in-town one. Like I got to go out of town later in the year. So there's an in-town one in the Liberty area. She's got another in-town one this weekend, believe it or not. So like multiple times. And I'll say, we need a little decorum at this. So Everyone's in a long day situation, right? These dances go from 8 in the morning. If you got an older kid, they go till 10 o'clock at night. And look, for the most part, most kids
on
don't have
to Friday, the competition started at 8 in the morning?
Oh, yeah.
What the heck is going on with this?
My her first dance was at 8, I don't know, 8 something. Huh. It started at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. That day it might have been 9 a.m., but it pretty early on. So we're already there. So it's a long days anyway, right? We're all in the same boat. You got to sit in there. You got to hear little kid screams for 8 consecutive hours. I get it. We're all on the brink of insanity by the end of this. But on Saturday, my kid's dance studio has a huge production number that comes in this massive stage that they have to like bring out and do it because it's like 20 people.
Okay.
Friday night, they ask us to help move the stage into the U-Haul. Doesn't fit through the doors because the legs don't turn the right way. So we have to re-engineer it Friday, we have to just take the legs off in the middle so we can get it in the U-Haul. Okay. Saturday, we are stuck in an entire re-engineering project that we weren't planning on because the other people have to dance and they need the stage. So we're like drilling out holes. We're having to like reconfigure the legs so you can like take them off. This whole thing, we're out in the sun for like 3 hours redoing this whole stage part. And this other dad... We're like at the tail end of this.
This other dad.
We're at the tail end of this, and I'm cooked, and they're getting ready to go on stage, and we're just finishing up this. Me and like 3 other dads. And he's like, hey, could you guys get your stuff out of the way? Our stuff's coming off the stage. And he was being rude.
Wait, a dad from another studio or something.
He wanted to move his stuff, and we were slightly in his way. I'm like, listen, pal, you can see, he was out there before. You can see that
That you said this to
him? We're getting our ass kicked. I was polite.
Okay.
I just said, we'll move it. Maybe it was not as polite. I just said, we'll move in a second. You can wait. I'm sorry you're in such a hurry, sir. All I'm saying is, can we have a little decorum? This guy knows what it's like. We're carrying 80-pound props.
Didn't they have a Dance Mom reality TV show? They need a Dance Dad reality TV show for you. It sounds like there's some drama, some arguments that were happening over stages fitting through doors.
I was going to say, a new series beginning.
Dance Dads.
Dance Dads?
I think Triple D would be better. Dance Dad Drama. Triple D.
The other thing I'm considering in these dance things is, you know how these people make money? You know, like I've bought a bootleg movie or two. The prices. The prices to get your kids.
Yeah, some of this stuff does sound like a complete ripoff.
What? Can I? How well do you think I'd do if I set up a bootleg version of this and then just sold it to these other families?
Don't you have to get like a contract to do it?
No contract. I'm saying I'm going to secretly record it. Like the people who... You know, do that at, you know, like a movie theater. I'm going to find a way to do it quietly.
You're going to get Ruby in trouble.
It's to do the entire studio. So like every kid's dance. So it's, you know, like 20 people, however many dances, right? To do every kid's dance, it's like for the weekend, it's like $1,200.
That's how much.
$1,200.
Who's paying $1,200?
The studio or us, right? Oh, us. We would be paying it.
To enter the competition or film?
To just get video of my kid dancing.
Hold on, whoa.
$1,200?
So to just get video of my kid dancing. $500,
$1,000.
All right,
so we've...
That's crazy.
So as you're speaking, we've figured out the whole scheme here. So it's great that your daughter's in the dance competition, but the real moneymaker, the whole setup of this whole thing is they're hoping you're going to spend $500 on video of your daughter's performance. Outrageous.
And they're like, hey, no cell phone video. I'm like, stop me. What if I buy like a high quality pinhole cam and I just like get video of my kid dancing for the rest of the time?
Didn't you
right?
complain about the video stuff a year ago?
I think it's getting higher price.
It's even higher.
I think it feels like inflation. I think it is higher than what I think for some reason 300 comes to mind for last year.
Did you buy video of your daughter?
Nope. I'll just wait till Nationals.
What'd you tell Ruby when she said, Dad, how come
she didn't
get video?
She didn't ask to see it, so.
Well, then you're good. Until she asked, don't buy one.
Hang on.
Until she asked, don't buy it.
I didn't pay for it.
If it's $500 now, how much will it be at Nationals then?
I mean, I got to assume it's a comparable price. Different company, so I can't say for sure. It's not the
maybe
same
maybe that's what you don't need to do bootleg. You need to find out how you just start your own company and get the contracts and just make a lot of money.
And then just Drew have my kids for free?
We'll call it the nice. Cody and Gold video team. Drew and I will go to these competitions as well if we can just make a bunch of money. It sounds like we got money to be made here.
Lots
you need to
of,
be the you need to be the video company. That's where the money's at, I guess.
How many, Cody, out of curiosity, if you could range guess, how many kids are in this all day? Are we talking 1,000 kids?
I've got no idea. I don't know.
Because if you were to say there's 1,000 kids.
Ours is one of the smaller studios, and it probably has 20, but some of the studios probably have 50 kids.
Okay, if there's 1,000 kids, let's say every family actually spent the $500,
it's a huge moneymaker.
I think there are probably 400 total dances. So if you do the math and it's like $30 per dance, which is the math of like every kid for the $1,200, you'd probably be talking 12 grand.
All right, so that's just the video. Now, what's the rough cost to enter? Like, how, like for you to like enter?
Oh, hundreds of dollars. I, you know, like that just goes in our studio fees. I don't even know.
Goodness.
I don't think I want to know what the studio, probably $400 or $500. I don't mean, I don't know.
Someone said they spent $23,000 last season on
That's
dance
insane.
For their girls.
What?
Not
no
including,
way.
Not girls including travel. Yeah. I don't know how two, three. I don't know. But it said that from the 816, not including travel and lodging.
Someone says, get those Meta glasses that record.
That, I mean, no, that'd be pretty hilarious.
Honest to God, those are what, $500?
That's what you should do.
I get the glasses. I'm good for life. I can record them forever.
You should do that.
Dude, are we kidding? It's not the worst plan.
So it costs more money. I don't have kids, but growing up and playing sports, I don't think it was costing my parents anywhere in the tens of thousands
Look,
of dollars.
I, certainly. Travel baseball might now.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I don't think it's that like unheard of. It's just it's still insane. Like, I have two sisters, and they both did dance growing up and stuff. Now they didn't do as much of the competition dance stuff, so they didn't have the travel. But still, even just the normal dance stuff, I remember was outrageous. But you're right. Like if you are on a travel baseball team. Some of you that are listening, I'm sure your son maybe is on that. Like the
guarantee, someone spent $20,000 doing that last year.
That's just
wild. Has the cost gone up that much?
Yes.
I might be wrong, but I don't think my parents spent that much money on doing AAU stuff.
Well, back then, maybe not. But so, like travel baseball when I was a kid, I'd play like 80 games in the summer as a kid. Travel baseball when I was a kid was we went to Harrisonville or Peculiar, at worst maybe the border of Iowa. Travel ball now is we've got our tournament upcoming in Jamaica. We'll see you there for a 7-day weekend. So like it's just a different system.
Someone says the whole dance industry is a scam. I mean, look, some of it definitely sounds like that's why you're doing it. I totally get it. But it's like, holy cow, the dollar amount is insane just for the video. All right, up next, though, let's talk about the biggest story in sports right now other than the NCAA tournament. It has to do with the bat that I thought was like made up that you bought at a toy store years ago. We'll explain that next. All right, back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. The biggest story in sports has to do with like if the name of the bat sounds like just like one of those Nerf bats, the torpedo bat, but it's a real thing. How this, I guess, wasn't talked about in spring training beats me. Like, were the Yankees not using torpedo bats in spring training? Was it only used on this opening
series? It was like a secret weapon they were waiting?
So for those who haven't paid attention, the Yankees are using something called torpedo bats. And we'll play the explanation of it in a second. But the reason why this also got a ton of attention is because the Yankees all weekend against the Brewers raked. Now, they were also playing in New York.
15 home runs, the most in a three-game series in Major League Baseball history, or franchise history.
Yeah. 15. So they were raking, and it was at Yankee Stadium, which we all know the dimensions are shorter. It was windy on opening day, too. They're also playing a Brewers team that we don't know how good they're going to be, but they certainly aren't the LA Dodgers. So keep that in mind. But here's a quick explanation on what is going on with these bats that look different and might be causing some more offense.
Now, you see the shape of Chisholm's bat?
I do. It's got a big barrel on it.
Well, it's actually a little bit lower than the barrel. The Yankee front office, the analytics department, did a study on Anthony Volpe, and every single ball, it seemed like he hit on the label. He didn't hit any on the barrel. So they had bats made up where they moved a lot of the wood into the label, so the harder part of the bat is going to actually strike the ball.
That'd be a weird way to hit. It's going up there expecting to get jammed and putting the meat of the bat towards the label?
It'd allow you to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah, you're wait all right.
That's the audio from Yes Network, by the way, one of the Yankees games over the weekend explaining this torpedo bat. It's blown up. It's like other than maybe the Final Four, it's the biggest story in sports right this second. And are other teams now going to mimic this? First and foremost, I get it if your first thought is this cheating?
Yeah. Yeah, that my initial instinct is, are you cheating? Because there are firm rules in there about experimental bats and whether or not you're allowed to do experimental bats and all this other stuff. But also they have dimensions, right? So it's like, hey, the barrel cannot be larger than this size in this area. So like, they are technically within the rules.
Yeah, baseball approved it. They had to get permission.
Yeah, you're not allowed to just bring a new weirdo bat into a game. You have to tell baseball you're going to do it first. Baseball approved it, and obviously for the Yankees' sake, It is working.
Is it working, or is it just it's three games against the Brewers in their stadium and it was windy on opening day?
I'll say it is three games. So there's no reason to just like, I don't think you need your favorite players. I don't think we need to go send Michael Massey to the bat store and say, hey, man, just real quick, go ahead and pick up a couple of these bad boys and let's call it a day. I don't think we need to rush to the store and figure out, or like, you know, someone just mentioned travel baseball. Every travel baseball kid rushed to the store to go get a Torpedo bat before their upcoming wood bat tournament. But I do think, I think it's kind of fairly obvious that there must have been some advantage in it. And the logic and the explanation behind the advantage makes sense. And talking to some members of the Royals organization, I think it's less about the Yankees all figure this out and that the bat manufacturers have been actually pitching this for years, have been doing all this research and been producing these bats, and they just straight up weren't popular for a while. I'm going to guess that's getting ready to change. And if this continues for even 2 weeks, honestly, you'd be kind of a fool if you were a player who was struggling and it was hitting in that part of the bat in particular. Look, if you're Bobby Witt Jr. and you're already hitting, or Vinny, you're already hitting, I don't know, you need to go change up your bat style. But if you find out that that's where you're regularly making contact, I don't know why you wouldn't try it. This seems like free money. It does feel like cheating. It feels like one of those things like the tush push where you're like, I don't like it. And I kind of prefer that you just have to swing a regular bat. Well,
that, and of course it's the Yankees. That's the other part. Like, it's not like the Royals, you know, it's not like the Royals or Brewers are the first team using it. Like, oh, wow, okay. No, of course it's the Yankees. And you know, yes, you can talk about resources within an organization and all of this, but this is not the first time anybody in baseball has ever heard of this. It's just the first time that the masses and those of us that are just fans of the game are hearing about these Torpedo bats. And now it really is the biggest story, and everybody's trying to figure out how much does it actually impact. I think deep down, the impact of it is overblown. Like, that's just my...
I agree. It's just like a bad series that got away.
Does it help? I think it probably does, but I think to the extent is overblown. This is not like some secret power-up. You know, you're playing some video game. You know, for those of you that download the new Backyard Baseball throwback game...
Put my sliders on 99 and now slug homers all the time.
Yeah, it's not that. You still got to square the ball up and in a lot of things, but maybe it increases the distance. Like, use these bats in the home run derby, please. Maybe that it does something like that. But you're right. If the next week or so the Yankees are still hitting at an abnormal rate of home runs and power with these bats, then you would be foolish as an organization, as a player, not to really, really explore this. And so we'll see what the Yankees do this week. But it is kind of wild that that this just blew up the way it did so, so quickly. And whether you're, you know, Louisville Slugger there in Louisville, Kentucky, making bats, and not everybody uses that, right? Like, Bobby has a different brand, manufacturer for his bats than somebody else does, or somebody has this manufacturer. But if you're a manufacturer of those bats, you're definitely, I bet you, if we got an honest answer, whether it's Louisville or you pick your bat manufacturer, that they have gotten some requests, to say the least.
Yeah.
To say the least. Hey, send me, you know, Send me like two or three of these. I just want to
swing it in the cage a little bit before the game and see how it feels.
Do you guys think Vinny's done that? Because I think Vinny, when he joined us the last time that he joined us, he was on his way home from Louisville. Louisville Slugger.
I'm going to ask him. I haven't. We'll see what he says when we ask him, but I'll ask him. If you're curious if the Royals are intrigued by this, Q was talking about it. Matt Quatrero, the Royals manager. This is what he had to say about it.
Well, good for them. I mean, that's creativity. That's using all your resources, right? I mean, you want to combine your resources with your experience, and it certainly is not something I could have used it. I never hit it on the sweet spot, so I certainly didn't think about it either. So good for them. I mean, you know, I'm sure if that's legal and other people find that to be the case, that, you know, somebody else is going to do it as well. So, you know, I did see the video of it yesterday. The home runs were before our game start, or a lot of them were before our game started, so I was aware of what was going on, but I did not hear about the bat until this morning. But yeah, I would imagine it becomes a trend now.
I mean, this could very well just be Yankee Stadium, small stadium.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's overblown.
But the trend is going to be kind of hard. There's going to be players who are tempted by it, especially players, because it's the bat speed thing for me. It's the players who consistently can't turn over the ball and hit it on the sweet spot and get their bat around on. If you're just moving it, then you just don't care that you get pitched inside nearly as much.
Yeah, let's just see what this week brings. But I think it is very important to point out, specifically opening day and the reaction was at Yankee Stadium. I believe it was very windy that day, and it was against the Milwaukee Brewers. And Cortez got rocked, just rocked. He might just be old and washed. I don't know, right? Like, so let's see. Yeah. But I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated by it, though. Like, it is really. I don't know how many articles you read as well. Like, it's just interesting to read up on it and how we got here, why the Yankees are here. They got this guy from MIT. They claim is like the source of all of it, and there's people that dispute that. But like, it's really interesting. But I'm skeptical that it's as big of a deal as, frankly, everybody, and here we are talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was the biggest story in sports probably over the weekend, and for, I think, pretty good reason. So, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those, like, give me 2 weeks, and then I'll give you a sense. But the first Royals player shows up with a torpedo bat, I'm interested. If MJ Melendez comes in to pinch hit today, and all of a sudden, he's got one, I'm curious. I want to, and he hits a homer?
Well,
I mean, geez. Then the story just kind of takes, it could just be Yankee Stadium is a joke. It's 313 down the line, and maybe specifically a bat like that would help them even more. Think about it. You jammed on the inside, more likely to be pulling it on that case, down that, what is it, 311, 313, something down the left field line? Like, it could be that it helps them more. I mean, 15 home runs in three games is ludicrous. That is a ludicrous number. How many home runs do the Royals have? Two? Is it two? How many do they have in the first three games?
I think that's right. Vinny obviously had the one on opening day.
Yeah. So, I mean, the
Mikel's
idea.
Mikel's got the other one, yeah, I think. Yeah.
The idea that some teams out there with 15 is kind of ludicrous. I will say one player in particular, and we'll talk more about the Royals. And if you missed it, we did talk about Peter Vermes being let go by Sporting Kansas City. We'll bring that back up at 11:30. We got to hand things off to Vern at noon today as we get ready for a Royals day game. It's Brewers opening day. So the Royals will be playing some baseball today at 1 o'clock with Vern's on deck starting at noon. One player, though, we talked about the guys who start slow historically and have consistently started slow and what it would mean to get a good start. Our guy, Vinny Pasquantino. Like, he last year hit 206 in April. He had a 270 on base percentage. The first few weeks, I can't remember how long, it was like a week before he even got an extra base hit. That's why we did Pasquantino live.
On April 7th last year, Vinny still had not had an extra base hit.
So, like, that's why we did Pasquantino live and all the fun, like, stuff that came with it. I love seeing him post-thumb surgery, full off season. He obviously has made a huge point of his health. He's still dealing with a hamstring injury, so, like, that's not even fully healed. He still managed to get on third yesterday, thankfully, to his own. But for a guy with 208 last year with a 311 on-base percentage and a 386 slug, it was the worst month of the season for him by a mile. Not close. For him to be already hitting well out of the gate, I think that's really important for their offense. That's why they start slow some years, because even their good hitters aren't hitting in the early part of the year, not just 5 through 9.
No, no doubt. And he's one of the three guys that carried the offense a year ago. So if you're able to get going early on in the season, it's why, not that Bobby has been ice cold, but he hasn't had the first three games. Again, let's put it all in perspective.
Yeah.
Three games, the first three games that you would expect out of him. But it's so weird to even say that, because it's so early that even say, I'm laughing as I'm saying it out loud, because it's hard to take it too seriously of, well, you know, the first three games that, you know, Bobby, he wasn't hitting like he usually does. It's three games. He'll be fine. But you're right. If the alternative you like, which is what Vinny's doing, which is hitting really well right out of the gate. It beats what we're seeing maybe for some other players that are a little slow. But yeah, let's see it carry over. They go on the road. They're in an indoor environment today in Milwaukee, too. So you're not in the cold weather city yet,
sure,
from a stadium where you're dealing with that, and that can temper your offense. We hear that all the time. Oh, wait till June when things warm up. Well, opening day was 80 degrees at Kauffman.
Saturday
was pretty nice. And then yesterday was cold. And then today they're in an indoor environment or a retractable roof environment in Milwaukee.
Vinny was on if we had done a list of the three players I thought most important start well this year. The other two guys would have been like concerning players, guys who have started slow, but have also just never come around as like productive, consistent big league players, like MJ Melendez, would have probably been number one from an offensive perspective. Vinny still would have been in the top three, because you mentioned what was true last year, where Vinny, Salvi, and Bobby did carry this offense for 162 games last year. But Vinny, it was really just two guys carrying it for the first 30. And not that they didn't, it's not that they were like in the drudges or falling apart, but what happened in the first series here, which is the offense starts, or I'm sorry, the pitching starts a little bit slower. So you need a few more guys getting you a few more runs here early. Last year, they were winning every game 2-1. Salvi would get an RBI, Bobby would get an RBI, and then they just hang out and wait for Walker to close it down or Reagan's to close it down. They might have to win 4-3, which means one more guy in the offense, 5-4, one more guy in the offense kind of going while the starting pitching maybe resettles back to what they did last year versus not like the worst start of all time, but slower start than we saw last year.
And they'll take on a Brewers team starting today. You mentioned it's their opening day. I think they got out to an 0-4 start after taking on the Yankees. So they're going to be, you know, no team wants to start 0-2, let alone 0-4. So the Brewers will be looking for their first win, but you're not facing the top of their pitching staff or anything like that. So we'll see if the Royals, who are slight favorites today, who will have Jonathan India in the lineup. If you're just joining us, that's the good news. Despite the scary pitch that hit him in the head from Emmanuel Clase yesterday, he's back in the lineup. Now, I thought, thinking of Vinny, Vinny had some comments about Jonathan India getting hit yesterday.
My view of it was watch him get hit in the face. And I'm still kind of collecting my thoughts on it, but he threw a pitch that he doesn't ever throw, the pitch before, which was a four-seam fastball. It was his first one of the year. And then the next pitch, they, you know, trying to come back up and in with the next pitch. You know, and you got to get it. You're trying to let a pitch ride, and it didn't. And it hit him right in the face after almost hitting him in the face the pitch before. So obviously I'm upset by it. I'm more upset for John because, I mean, we don't know what's going on with him right now. So it sucks, and I don't think there's any – do I think there was intent behind it? Absolutely not. He's trying to go close a ball game, finish a ball game. It did happen, and that sucks a lot. And it felt like there was a lot of – and again, scouting reports, different ways of pitching. You got to own the inside part of the plate. It felt like we were moving quite a lot this weekend. Again, I know there wasn't any intent behind it, but felt like there was no adjustment made there, and that's frustrating. But again, they beat us. Hats off to them. It's a sucky situation.
So that was Vinny Pasquantino. I believe that was from FanDuel Sports Network after the game yesterday. And since then, we now know, fortunately, Jonathan India is all right. He is back in the lineup. But that's wild that the four-seam fastball, he threw it one time last year, Class A, and he threw it. And that's not the pitch that hit him, but that was the pitch before that hit him.
And then he tried to go inside again. I get Vinny's point, which is a little bit like, they have all the control in this situation. I have to just be reactionary. But like, how far inside are they allowed to go if they've got no command? And what point as a pitcher, just for the safety of the person you're facing, if you don't have it, do you like, no, I'm going to keep trying to go inside till I what? Crush this guy's temple? Like, that was a scary, scary hit. The initial reaction was like, oh, man, India might have to miss a couple of games here at best. Like, maybe it's a concussion.
Unfortunately, it got him in, you know, the right part of the helmet, right? Like, it got him in the right part of the helmet, and he's able to be in the lineup today. I mean, you're worried about a broken jaw. You're worried about all kinds of things. You just don't know. And he is ready to roll, though, today against the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll get into some college basketball. The Final Four is set. You and I have differing opinions on what this Final Four is going to be and the matchups and just the makeup of it. That's coming up in 12 minutes or so. But locally, the story right now is just how many guys are in the transfer portal from the University of Kansas. Another one just
entered. And Ryland Griffin,
as we were talking on the show today. So I think when we discussed the Kansas basketball season a few weeks ago, we said they were probably going to have a pretty strong reset. You know, there's maybe two guys that are coming back kind of thing. So guys transferring, not surprising. Like Ryland Griffin entering the portal, Coit entering the portal, probably not surprising. The one that this weekend was surprising, and he could still come back, although I'm not sure, is Florey. So his guardian put out a statement to the Kansas City Star, and it seemed a little conflicting, but like their goal is to still end up coming back to Kansas. So then you think, okay, is it a leverage play for more money to show that he can get X amount on the open market?
Because he seemed like one of the few guys you actually wanted back.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to any Kansas basketball fan. There was reason. A lot of people wanted him to play more this year, and KJ Adams was playing over him. So, no, this is a guy that if you're going to have a reset, he needs to be part of the reset. Are they really not going to be able to retain him? I don't buy that it's going to be because of money. That's the one thing that I want to reiterate for those that are suggesting that in the NIL era, KU now just can't compete or whatever. Look, you want to be critical of the coaching from Bill Self, player development, getting the right guys. That's all fair game, and they have not done that well. We've said that over and over. But acting like that they're not getting the top tier talent anymore, that's just false. Like AJ Store was a top transfer. He just didn't work out.
Hunter Dickinson was a top
top money guy.
Zeke Mayo was a five-star transfer.
So it's not like they can't find, they have the money.
They've not been finding the right guy.
They haven't found the right guy. And you got to wonder in this scenario, if Flory ends up leaving, how much does it matter that in January when he was playing better than KJ Adams, Bill Self went back to KJ Adams and took care of his guy in that regard. So that's what's interesting. I still think there is a chance he comes back to university, but this would be the stunner. Rylan Griffin transferring is not stunning.
David Coit doesn't move the needle for you?
No.
Here's the one thing, though, is that now they are officially at the entire remaining Kansas roster is in the portal. Like, all of them. He doesn't have a starting three if he wanted to do it. So for all the people that are
fine with that, other than Flory, I mean, the team was bad last year. I'm fine. I mean, it should be a reset as long as Flory comes back.
Like, you know, we always kind of put it a little standard. By KU standard, yes. I mean, they were still like mediocre at worst, probably.
But that's not
going to
get it done at Kansas.
No, it's
you know?
Not. Here's the thing. For anybody who is questioning the notion that's like, because now you can't pay people behind closed doors, I would actually encourage you. There's a lot of articles out right now because the way that NIL is shifting, there's still a lot of behind closed doors payments because the way these like caps and all this stuff is going to work, people are still going to find shady ways to pay players. So if you think that's going away, it's just not. So we'll just start there. Cheating's going to continue. But the other part about this is that Bill Self, this will be the single best offseason he's ever had to prove any of the NIL doubters wrong. He is going to start with a 100% pretty much from scratch roster, maybe 5% from what he was working with last year. It's going to be a huge transfer portal class, maybe Flory, and then a couple of high-level prospects. Yeah,
number one, number two player in the country.
Derek Peterson's going to start. He's going to be your best player.
Yeah, but like you are starting from bare bones scratch. This is the most blank starting position I've seen in a Kansas team ever, which means a chunk of it's going to have to come from the portal again.
Oh yeah,
and I'm going to guess they're going to be one of the highest spending teams in the portal again. Who are the number one? Who's expected to be the number one portal player?
Dude, there's like 2,000 players in the portal right now, and that's not even exaggerating.
RJ Lewis or Luis, I would say from St. John's is right now graded as
Dent, if not the best. Dent from New Mexico is very high on the list.
He's already committed though.
Has he already decided that he's going?
He went to UCLA.
Really? Not Kentucky. Everybody thought he was going to Kentucky.
It was Kentucky, Gonzaga, and UCLA.
According to 24/7, Adrian Woolley from Kennesaw State is their number one.
I think he's the guy that KU has reached out
Thomas
to.
Thomas from UNLV. Josh Dix, who already committed somewhere, didn't he?
I don't think from Dix has Iowa? Committed anywhere yet. No.
Okay.
Owen Freeman, who was a transfer from Iowa, committed to Creighton.
Point like, being I'll be honest, is, of the yeah, 10 guys yes. on this list, right, I don't care if it's the kid from Virginia or all these other guys we just mentioned from Xavier or whatever. I would almost bet blindly to anybody who thinks Kansas doesn't spend in the portal without even knowing anything about where they are in the mix. I would almost bet blindly that of the top 10 transfer portal kids, 24/7 list right now, that Kansas lands one of them. Like I would bet $50 blindly to somebody, assuming that one of these top 10 portal kids is going to Kansas. Because like the money's not the problem. The question is whether or not Bill Self can actually build a team again.
And if it fits the system that he runs, because that's the thing is, yeah, you get AJ Store, but he didn't. It didn't work to just compile four or five of the best players in the portal and just throw them together. It just didn't work. So
yeah, they have to reevaluate. And like we played the comments after the loss to Arkansas. I do think they recognize they have to do it differently. They're not just like, oh no, we can just do the same thing and figure it out. I've told you, I think they need to actually have some new pieces on the coaching staff as well. I know he has a bunch of longtime assistants that have had plenty of success. They just won a national title together in 2022. But I think that's an area to look. We've talked about the GM role. More and more programs are doing that. I think Kansas could use, as most programs could, a general manager. But the Flory transfer portal
that'd be a tough
flirtation
loss.
It was the stunner. These other names are not.
And I think you're right, Gold. It's not money related. Again, he's from Indiana. Was originally, I believe, committed to IU before. It sounds like he either wants to move closer to home and go to a place like IU, or it's Kansas. For the people that think it's Missouri, sorry, it's not happening. It's not going to happen.
Everybody can dream for a little bit, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, let them dream for a little bit.
And I'd love Florida to go to Wisconsin, but that's not happening, you know?
You want your Badgers to get him?
Yeah, they've been losing
some guys. He looks
like
there's no reason.
Well.
Honestly, he should have been. The problem is that this is like the Chiefs with a veteran player, veteran linebacker. We've had these arguments a million times. Bill Self goes with the trusted whether you like it or not. And KJ's not a bad player. He's just a limited player. And I think sometimes that's the problem. It's like, he's limited. He's not going to screw up the whole world for you. He's a limited player. And when you see a guy in Flory who's on the bench and you're like, he's not a limited player and there's a huge ceiling, I'd like the ceiling, please. Even if there's times in which he'd play worse.
Particularly on defense, you know, after Hunter Dickinson, you know, sometimes, yeah, for lack of a better term, was a no-show defensively.
Yeah. I mean, Hunter Dickinson, we've talked about him. It's the reason why he was in college still.
He's a really good player, but yeah, you're
really,
right.
Really, really good, overseas? Really, really good college player. That's what, yeah, he is.
And he's, yeah, never, I'm sure, played in the NBA.
And he'll play over. Yeah, he'll make great money overseas somewhere, I'm sure. But yeah, there's a reason why he wasn't in the NBA. We saw it play out again this year. All right, up next, I want to talk about the four teams left. The final four is set. You and I disagree on what this matchup is going to be for both games on Saturday and how we got here. We'll get into that. Plus, we'll work in a trash of the day coming up next here on Cody and Gold.